Welcome to the Empire Builders Podcast, teaching business owners the not-so-secret techniques that took famous businesses from mom and pop to major brands. Stephen Semple is a marketing consultant, story collector, and storyteller. I'm Stephen's sidekick and business partner, Dave Young. Before we get into today's episode, a word from our sponsor, which is, well, it's us. But we're highlighting ads we've written and produced for our clients. So here's one of those.
Are you tired of reading employment listings where you have to have a PhD just to start in a mailroom? I'm Rick Showers from Noble RV, and in our business, formal education doesn't really help much. Most of us learned on the job, like I did.
Wait, Rick, you learned the RV business the hard way?
That's right, Bob. Started at the bottom. My first job is what they called the lot person. I'd move trailers around with a tractor, keep the lot clean and organized, and up here that means snow removal, grass cutting, and anything that needs to be done to make the place look clean and inviting.
But is that a job with a future?
Well, it got me to where I am today. And Noble is hiring a lot person right now. We're looking for someone who likes to work outdoors, someone who takes personal responsibility for making the rest of the team look good. If that sounds like you or someone you know, reach out, because there's a future for you here with us.
And that's Noble.
NobleRV.ca.
Welcome back to the Empire Builders Podcast. I'm Dave Young. Stephen Semple is here with another fascinating story about building an empire. And we're looking at a tech empire today. We're going to talk about Etsy.
Yes.
And so all I know about Etsy is you can buy all kinds of weird stuff on Etsy.
Etsy is very much a technology company. In other ways, Etsy is very much an arts and craft company. You know, when you really think about it, right?
Yeah, yeah. A community of arts and crafts people.
Yes, very much so. So Etsy was started by Rob Kalin, and it was founded on June 18th, 2005. And it went public 10 years later in March 2015, raising $237 million and giving it an evaluation of $1.8 billion. At that time, they do about $2.5 billion in sales. They've got 2,800 employees. So you know what? A pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rob Kalin, he's like this artistic, hands-on kind of guy. You know, he's not involved with Etsy any longer, but the home he lives in today, he built the entire thing from the ground up, including all the furniture. Today, he's got this thing where he makes these custom-made speakers that are like these $50,000 speakers. And he's constantly looking at this whole idea of trying to match technology with old school tools and craftsmanship. And he really thinks about himself as being a creator. And, you know, Etsy started because of a need that he had, like a lot of these empires we covered. It came from filling his own need, right? Because he would make stuff, and he'd want to try to find a place to sell it.
And I just know from being in the art glass and that kind of world, before the internet, if you're a crafts person or an artist, however you want to put it, well, you got to find a show somewhere, right? You got to go to a craft show. You got to go to a fair, a Renaissance fair or something, and set up a booth, drag all your stuff there, and hope that you sell some.
Yeah.
And Etsy became that online.
It did. Very much so. Very, very much so.
Yeah.
So he grew up outside of Boston. His mom was a teacher. His dad was an architect. Rob was one of those kids who couldn't sit still in school. And he stopped going to school. He wouldn't go to school, and he didn't tell his parents. He got a job at a camera store. And he had to figure out what he wanted to do. And he graduated from high school barely.
started wearing suits and carrying his lunch in a briefcase. Parents didn't notice.
Yeah, exactly. So he graduates from high school barely. You know, he did the GED approach, and he became, you know, a cashier at Marshall's. And he said it was a good learning experience, but not a lot of money in it. He decides he wants to go to art school, and he had to get to New York City. So he gets to New York City, and he's working at a bookstore. And he started to do construction at night to make money, because what we know is not a lot of money in retail, right? Eventually, that construction at night turned in the full time. And he was then taking, you know, classes at night. It sort of flipped around. And he was doing classics and languages and things along that lines. And a buddy of his moves to Paris and he decides, you know, I should go live in Paris for a little while. So he goes, lives in Paris for a little while. He returns to New York and his landlord, when he returns to New York, needs a website. So his landlord somehow gets talking to him about this website. He says, hey, I need this website. And he looks at him and says, you're an artistic guy. Can you do a website?
Yeah.
And can you beat this price? Can you do it for less than this? And he's like, sure, I could do it for less than that.
That's a race that nobody wins.
Yeah, exactly. He said, but not only did he say he could do it for better, he says, I could do it for half.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So he's now making a website. He has no idea how to do that, but he's fascinated by the process. And this is early 2000s, right? When building websites was hard.
Yeah. I want to give credit to his landlord, though, for asking the creative guy to build the website instead of the IT guy.
You know what? That's a good point.
In 2000, most websites were built by tech geeks.
Yes.
And that's, I guess, okay. I mean, they probably worked, but that's why they didn't convert, because they made them techie instead of creative.
Yes.
There, I've given my rant.
No, that's a great point. And I had not thought of that, because you're absolutely right. The artistic side, especially on web, still even today on websites, is highly overlooked. But he got fascinated by the process, and basically within a few years, he got kind of known for doing sites. So Rob started actually doing a fair number of sites. And along the lines, he met Chris McGuire and they started doing more websites together. But what they wanted to do was build something that was there for their own, because Rob had been making furniture and he wanted to sell it himself online. And really at that point, the only option was eBay. Then he had met another buddy who was making furniture and wanted a site as well. And it's 2005. So instead of a site for Rob and a site for his buddy, they thought, well, let's build one together and we'll sell both your stuff and my stuff on this site. And they needed a name. They needed a name for this. They came up with the name Etsy. And they liked the name because it kind of had this emotional feeling to them. It had no baggage. And where the idea came from is they had misheard something in a foreign film.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, I love that.
So they started to build up Etsy. And it became, the more they looked at it, it became clear it could be pretty big. And so they decided they need to go out and do some fundraising. And so they were doing construction work for this one real estate guy, and they managed to convince him to invest $50,000 into starting Etsy. They went to their grandfather, who was quite a business person, and told him what they were thinking about doing. And he gave them some ideas in terms of how to raise money. And they got another couple of investors to kick in. And so now it's 2005. So I want you to think about 2005. Here's where most of the money went in terms of building this infrastructure out in 2005. There's no internet infrastructure in 2005. The software in 2005 is terrible. There's none of this idea of cloud computing. So they actually ended up putting a ton of money into hardware, because typically what you had to do is host these sites yourself.
You had to build all that.
You had to build all of it. You had to host it yourself. So basically, they managed to put all that together. But one of the things that they did have going for them was eBay. Now, and the reason is because eBay had already established the business model, listing fee, sales fee.
Right.
And on top of that, eBay had also built a lot of the payment infrastructure. And what they decided to do was just leverage that payment infrastructure, right? Because remember, PayPal came out of eBay.
Right, right.
Right. Rob talks about how without eBay, they would never have been able to make any of this work. They stood on the shoulders of eBay. And the other thing a lot of people forget is a lot of the technology that eBay built was public domain. They allowed it to be public domain because they wanted to allow this infrastructure to be built. It would have been way harder without eBay to overcome all of this. So they take about 2.5 months, create the site, they launch the site, they hit the go button, they went to dinner. Few people found it. And in the first year, they do a massive amount. This is the amount of sales that the site did in the first year. How much do you think the site sold in the first year? How much do you think?
Based on sort of the tongue-in-cheek approach you're taking, I'm going to say $25,000.
Oh, they did better than that. They did $1 million of sales in the first year. But keep in mind, they got 3% of that $1 million. So.
Yeah.
So they
so about $25,000.
There you go. You weren't far off. And it was found, you know, through organic and blogs as the early days of the web. And what they found was the sellers were, you know, mainly women. And they brought in a fourth founder who contributed really to the early look and feel and how to look at items and shop in different ways. One of the things that they found was a really popular way to shop was actually to shop by color, right? And they got in touch with the founders of Flickr and asked their advice and met a few other VenCap folks. And then they went on and raised another $250,000. And in the first couple of years, there, you know, there's no office and things along that lines. But here's where it's interesting to me. I find way too often people who are developing things in the technology space don't get out of the space. And I think this is where, again, you pointed out early on, he wasn't a tech guy. He was an artist.
Yeah.
He was a craftsperson.
So you got to get out and talk to other artists.
Bingo. So what did he do? He went and visited every craft fair he could think of.
Hey, Steve, I want to interrupt us. Can I interrupt ourselves?
Well, look, it's your podcast too. You can do what you want to do.
Here's the thing. This is where we would normally play that really cool, highly produced ad that our buddy Mick's voice is in, and Gary has done some of them.
Don't forget Matthew Behrens.
Matthew, yeah.
He'll be hurt. He'd be hurt if we forgot his name.
No, they're fabulous. But I thought, well, part of doing a campaign is you change it up every now and then and do it a little bit different. And I thought maybe you and I could do the ad.
Okay, well, let's do it.
Basically, this is the reason we're doing the Empire Builders podcast, is so that we can share stories of business owners. And hopefully the audience that likes the Empire Builders podcast is a bunch of business owners, right? That's sort of the plan.
That's the hope.
We have a special offer for business owners.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't cost anything. And it's fun for us. And it's fun for you. We promise it'll be fun. And it's just basically contact us and spend 90 minutes with us.
Here's how it works. Just give a little bit of background. Reach out. You can book the session online. Go to the Empire Builders podcast and go to Get Started. And right online, you can book it. So nice and easy that way. You'll receive an email with a scorecard and a questionnaire. So you just got to take a little bit of time to fill that out and get it to us. And what that allows us to do is, instead of it being this typical, hey, we're great, hey, we're wonderful, here's our ads, you should hire us, it actually allows us to do some research so we can show up prepared and give you, the business owner who contacts us, some solid advice for free. I don't like sales. I'd much rather do that than be the sales guy. And here's my attitude. If we give you great advice, and it's something you think you can apply and helps your business, maybe then you'll want to go to the next step and hire us. And even if not, go and apply those things and grow your business. You know, the more people do that, just better off we all are.
This questionnaire that you're going to give them, again, remember, this 90-minute session is not about us. It's about you and your business.
Correct.
So that's why we need to know a little bit about you and your business so that we don't make it about us.
Right.
We want to make it about you.
Yeah. And it means the first 30 minutes, we're not asking the, you know, the basic lowball questions. You've already given us the answers to those things. We can just get right at it. So take us up on it, man.
Contact information is at our website. You'll find us. Let's get back to the story.
All right, back to the story.
He traveled the world going to craft fairs and handing out his cards, not only to connect with the community, but guess what? It was also a great way for him to promote, hey, here's this other forum that you can use to sell your crafts. But he traveled the world,
yeah,
going to craft fairs. And I wonder if he was a technology person, whether he would have thought that way. It's, yeah, like the early days of Airbnb. And we talked about Airbnb. Gosh, I can't even remember which episode Airbnb was. But
way back.
Way back.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they were told to do was go to some of the early, you know, people using Airbnbs for listing and meet with them and talk to them. And they found they learned so much in terms of how the technology was being used differently. But I think one of the advantages Rob had was, yeah, like what we need to do is get out there and talk to craftspeople. So he traveled the world going to crafts fairs, connecting with the community, learning about what the community wanted, and handing out his business cards. PayPal was the method of payment. And they'll tell you, you know, PayPal built a lot of stuff that it did not patent. there was a lot of payment stuff that they were able to leverage, like including things like the PayPal resolution procedures. You know, they would, like, if there was a problem, they just kicked it over to PayPal. Now, initially, things had to be handmade to be on Etsy. And in the beginning, there was this list of categories. And if it didn't fit, it couldn't be on the site. And then they opened it up. And then when they opened it up, they had someone who tried to list a Ferrari once to sell it on Etsy. But what they really decided to do is really let the community police things, because everything was new. And they made a, like they'll tell you, they made a ton of first-timer mistakes. But what they really tried to do was just stay very tied to that community.
The technology that they used, I remember, this is probably 10 years ago, I had a good friend in Tucson that his wife made like pillowcases and drapes and things and sold them on Etsy. And he was doing vinyl wall stickers, right? He had a machine that would cut out palm trees that you could stick on your kid's wall.
Okay, kind of stuff.
Or, you know, a big sign that says home sweet home. He was cracking the Etsy search algorithm, right? That was his day-to-day challenge, was how do we get our items to show up higher in Etsy search, right? So it's like people that try to do SEO for Google. He was doing SEO, internal SEO on Etsy.
Yes.
So as they evolved and changed, you know, they're changing that algorithm all the time to make sure that they get good sales.
Yep.
And that they were helping their customers be successful.
It's definitely one of the big challenges. Yeah. Now, one of the things that's really unfortunate is a couple of years in, because they're making all of these mistakes, they hire a COO. Right. So Rob goes out and hires a COO. And one of the mistakes he makes when he hires a COO is didn't really fit the culture well. And there's one point where Rob and the CEO kind of come to some loggerheads, and Rob ended up getting kicked out of Etsy, was bought out and things along that lines. Like, he did fine by all of it. But because when we look at Etsy today, you know, is it as much of that craft business as how it started? I don't know. But the part, though, that I think is the lesson to learn here is what I really like that he did was a couple of things. One is leveraging the technology that's there where he could. But I thought the thing that was really inspiring to me was the getting out of the office, meeting with the customer, getting out into the community.
Absolutely.
And not sitting there, because I think too often, especially people who are startups, get caught in this situation where they don't go out and talk to their customers enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so true.
And he was traveling the world. Like, he would talk about how he would be at crafts shows in Germany and France, and like traveled the world visiting these shows and learning what people were looking for and helping them put it on. And then in terms of the changes in the algorithm, Dave, one of the things I found interesting was they were then also heavily study how people were buying things. And yeah, what they found was people wanted to search things by color, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I'm decorating a room in my house and I have some theme colors, and I just want to look for artsy stuff to put on the shelves and hang on the walls.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I want it to be green,
or find things that go together.
Yeah. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
The other lesson that he learned, obviously, is from hiring that COO is this is a capitalist society. And you don't get a hold on to your dream. I shouldn't go down that path, but it's like there's a part of me that always gets sad when a founder gets ousted like that.
We've seen this more than once on the podcast in terms of ones we've covered where the founders have been ousted and then sometimes even brought back later. When you sell the business and you are no longer the controlling interest, you know, other people now own the business. And look, sometimes it works out great. Not always. I have a new client I'm working with right now who, you know, they recently sold a portion of the business to private equity. And yeah, you know, you don't have free rein to do whatever it is that you want to do like you did when you were 100% owner. That's part of the deal. You take that check, right?
Absolutely. And
sometimes you have to because you need that injection of capital to make the dream happen. But, you know, there's a balancing act there.
Yeah. I'm the bleeding heart. My heart goes out to the guy that had the dream to start it.
Yeah.
I always find that a little sad.
But, you know, there's also lots where it's worked out well. But I think one of the things is
yeah, he's probably doing fine.
He's doing fine. But there's also even other businesses that do that, you know, and the founders still stay very involved. But I think part of the lesson there is when you're bringing those outside people in, don't just look at the skill sets, look at the fit.
Yeah. You got to find somebody that has a heart for the creative
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you're an Etsy, you've got to find somebody that has a heart for creators.
Yes.
That's their core. They've got, like a lot of websites, you've got two customers, really. You've got your users, right? Your people that have set up their store and are counting on Etsy for their living.
Yes.
Or at least to fund their hobby.
Yes.
And you've got the customers that are actually their customers, but they're ultimately Etsy's customers that are buying the things from
them.
So you own this marketplace, and you've got people that are creators and people that are looking for things that creators make. Maybe they wish they were creators, but they're looking at Etsy because they want something that's handmade. They don't want to go down to Walmart.
Want something a little bit different. I go and I buy things periodically from Etsy because I want something that's just a little bit different. Yeah. But they are that intermediary in the middle and are serving that role. And it grew out of the need that he had because he was making furniture and wanted to find a place to sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was cool.
Cool story. Glad I know more about Etsy now.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please share us, subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and leave us a big, fat, juicy 5-star rating and review. And if you have any questions about this or any other podcast episode, email to questions@theempirebuilderspodcast.com.